Blog Talk Radio.
Option Show with Richard Talk to Me Guy and Sherry Edwards. Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning, Richard. Great to hear you. I love
Thank you.
Voice. It is such a wonderful radio voice, and I imagine what you look like, you know, from there. I'm not going to say it on the air, but just from your voice. This kind, gentle, peaceful-faced person who's very loving, but don't cross him. kind of thing.
Yeah, some of that. That's all pretty good. That's okay. I go with that. Thank you. I resemble that voice.
Well, welcome to our audience. We have a very special guest today. We will be speaking to Susan Hale. She's been with us before, and she talked about sacred singing and sacred healing sites around the world. We talked about her other book then, and I can't call up the exact name of it. That is really weird. I just had it on the
Sacred Space, Sacred Sound, The Acoustic Mysteries of Holy Places.
And I think she is so right in going to those places and singing, and that's the way we kept ourselves holy, W-H-O-L-E, whole. And H-O-L-Y, holy, entombment in one with God. So she has a new book and a new concept, which is right up Richard's environmental alley. It's about singing, or tree singing, and what that means to Mother Earth. But we have a few announcements. We are only on Blog Talk Radio today. No WebEx, so go over there. 347-850-1407. Usually we do a video of the show, but I don't know why it ended up we aren't doing it today. Maybe it's an experiment. So I don't know what else to say about that we're only doing it one way. We are sponsored by the Institute of Bioacoustic Biology and Sound Health here in Ohio. And we are giving away a two-day workshop on anti-aging. We're going to include the free software to identify what may be present about you that is causing you to age prematurely or not. It is going to be on November 3rd and 4th. We encourage you to go to our site, soundhealthoptions.com. Go to classes today, sign up, and where it says this costs $1,200, just mark through that because we're going to do this free this time for people. Maybe through the end of the year. And I think in December we're doing diet. This one is about aging, and it does include the software. We're doing this from our nonprofit 501c3 Sound Health Research in the hopes of giving you enough tools and information to set up a bioacoustic center in every community. And that just means sticking a microphone in front of your face when you aren't singing, just saying words, and seeing what those frequencies mean. And right now we're doing a project by request for a national radio show. We are looking up what performance enhancers Hillary might be on during the last debate, and maybe something about her stress about this new announcement for the FBI reopening her case. So that's what we're doing at Sound Health. What are you doing, Richard?
Over here at Blog Talk Radio, well, actually today only at Blog Talk Radio, for information on anything that we're talking about, you can go to soundhealthoptions.com, click on the radio tab, and for today's show, click on Blog Talk Radio, and it'll show the information about Susan Hale and what we're going to talk about today. And at the bottom of that page, probably about 20 to 30 minutes after the show, there's a player down there at the bottom where you'll be able to listen to any of the last five shows that we've done right there in that player. And then if you click on one of the shows, it'll open up the window on Blog Talk Radio where you'll be able to see the show, see the show notes, see anything that we've talked about, and also download the show if you want to listen to it later. And you can also always find the shows by going to iTunes and searching for Sherry Edwards, or to Stitcher, or any, you know, pick a podcast aggregator of your choice, which is basically just an app that easily lets you follow podcasts or rebroadcasts of shows, and search for Sherry Edwards, and you'll find some of the, I think we're now up to 475 shows available to listen to. That's a lot of talking. It amazes me. Wow. So there's all that. Shall I go ahead and jump into an announcement? Even though we're not showing it, I'd still like to talk about those things. Whoops, I lost Sherry.
And I just didn't realize how long we had been together, 400 and some shows, and we haven't even met face. Well, you've met me face to face. I don't remember meeting you because
right. Well, it was a long. It was a long time ago when you were when you were doing shows in person, meaning like Whole Life Expos and that kind of events. I think once years ago, somebody dragged me into a booth, a friend of mine, and said, "You have to do this. You have to do this." And I vaguely remember, I think it was, Sherry Edwards and talking into a microphone and spooky stuff, learning about your voice. That was years ago. More than 10, under 20. A long time ago.
That was the nano voice where people can evaluate themselves, wasn't it?
Yes,
that's,
I believe,
still
so.
On the site.
I still think nano voice, you see. Yeah, I think nano voice is an amazing product for free, to be able to pull it up. And as I say, you asked me about this recently on another show, I use Nano Voice pretty regularly to check myself with food allergies or to see if something's working with me or not, where I'll take a vocal print, and that just means record your voice into Nano Voice. And then I eat something, and I wait about 20 to 30 minutes, and then I do that again, and I see if there's anything like made wonky by what I just ate. Sherry has much better words for what that is.
Yeah, I like
exactly.
That word wonky.
Yeah.
Hundreds of thousands of people have downloaded that over the last, I guess it's 11 years now that we've had that up on our site available to people. So they can see who and what they really are. And if they want to move here, talk about that. And move there, talk about that. And it'll give them an idea of what will go into balance and harmony for them. Just like some people sing themselves well. They feel bad, so they listen to music. It's the same kind of thing. You can see what notes are missing, what you need, what notes are overabundant. So that works well for people. But we should get back to the show and what we're supposed to be doing here. You always
exactly.
have this wonderful, you always have this wonderful environmental thing.
I will make an announcement. I'll check on that, Sherry.
Here.
I'll get back to that, I think. Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
I will toss this information in, and I'll put the link for this in the show notes over at Blog Talk Radio and in chat, that I was talking about pipelines, and I found this article, and this is from October 25th, so this is recent, talking about 220 significant pipeline spills already this year. Exposes troubling safety record. So this was a recent pipeline which leaked, 100,000 gallons of crude or some kind of toxic oil substance into an aquifer or into, an actual stream, I think was the announcement last week. And what, people sort of like blow this off, which blows my mind that this is even allowed to continue to occur. I mean, I have a list here of events from Oklahoma to Alabama to, just a whole list of events that have occurred in this article. And one of the things that we don't realize is not only is it destroying water, and we only have so much water, there is no new fresh water. We're still in the same water that Cleopatra was bathing in. So this is all we've got. opposite is that, and the stat here is that the cost of these leaks since 2006 is an amount of $4.7 billion. $4.7 billion of damage and, you know, cleanup and who knows what all. And who's even, you know, I don't know, it just blows my mind. It's an ongoing subject that just blows my mind that we continue to have these occurrences, allow these occurrences to occur. You know, the oil companies just, you know, dump, have leaks, have things happen. Here's one in Alabama, 336,000 gallons of gas, you know, dumped. Really? Just leaked. Oops. Wouldn't you think somebody would notice? Is this safe technology that this can just happen? I mean, it's just, it does get my goat. Definitely. There's that. And then I have a, this is kind of, this
is
exactly.
Is there something we can do about it, Richard?
We could make the we could hold the companies. Well, one of the, you know, an observation of Canada doesn't allow our oil rail cars into Canada because our oil cars don't pass their safety standards. So, and, you know, when you have leaks in pipelines, I mean, it's plumbing. This isn't rocket science. This is plumbing. If something ruptures, it's because it hasn't been maintained or there's something wrong that's not being monitored. I mean, to have, like in this incident in Alabama where Colonial Pipeline leaked 336,000 gallons, 336,000 gallons, that's a lot to have it just leak. Like, oops, it leaked. What is that? How is that even possible? That's a huge amount of water. Or any kind of liquid. In this particular case, it's gasoline. You know, that spill was Colonial Pipeline's fifth in the state that year, or this year. And it's just, you know, yeah, we could monitor the pipelines. They could actually be, I don't mean we, the government, I mean the industry itself could start monitoring themselves. They could actually take care of their plumbing. They could meet standards so these accidents and incidences don't occur. And it just seems to me that it comes down to they don't want to spend the money to monitor, and they'd rather take the loss of having a leak, not caring about the effects it has on nature, the, you know, what's in the water, what's going to end up in our water table. Now we're having, you know, back to, I didn't mean to go here, but, you know, it's like what's happening in the fracking industry where we're beginning to see residue of some of the solvents and chemicals used in the fracking industry are now appearing on our produce on our tables. Well, really? I don't know. Blows my mind. So that's what we can do, is we can make them accountable. What about that? How about that? Actually make them, you know, take care of this and don't allow it to happen. Stop it. If you have a leak, stop it. Shut down. Lose some money. Okay, there's that. Then I have a brief comment about this, what I'm framing as this ridiculous FBI deciding now is the time to talk about, oh, we found this laptop and there might have stuff on it. It isn't really a reopening of the case. The case is not closed yet. And what blows my mind about this is that Huma Abedin worked for Hillary. I don't know if she still does at this moment. And if the information, what they sort of alluded to, because they've said nothing other than like, oh, you know, it could be scary. Once again, you know, Anthony Weiner's resurfaced in a weird way. What really blows my mind is probably knowing the government, at least millions of dollars is spent investigating these emails, the infamous Clinton server emails. And so what I'm thinking about is really in all this time and the thousands and tens of millions of dollars, knowing the government, and all the FBI's research, nobody at any point sat down with Huma Abedin and said, we need to see all of the devices that you could have communicated with Hillary with? Really? It's just coming out because they're suddenly discovering that Anthony Weiner's laptop had communication from her on it? And if it's going through the server, it's already on the server. So it's just like suddenly this is discovered. If that is true, that it's suddenly just discovered and nobody thought about looking at it before, it seems awfully incompetent. It just blows my mind. So those are my announcements.
Or political spin.
Yeah, yeah. The perfect time to do this. I mean, there will be as a number of people have observed, there will be nothing resolved before the election. There's no way the FBI can do anything quickly. So it's a very curious thing this is really my opinion. It seems like there's incompetence by the fact that this laptop has just been discovered, like, oh my goodness, we just found this. Really? But Aberdeen is not a key player, but I mean, she's been with Clinton for a while. Nobody went to her and said, we need to see all of your devices? Really? Let alone the spin of, 11 days, 12 days before the election. Seems curious. I'll just leave it in that frame. Okay, so now if you'll talk for a minute, Sherry, I will go backstage and contact Susan.
Okay, we're going to be talking a bit about this idea of greed on a show tonight from England about our politics and how we got into this situation. Well, think about the idea that if everybody was forced, no, if everybody wanted to tell the truth, what different kind of world would this be? What would happen to the legal system? What would happen to marriages? What would happen to corporate mergers? So the fact that humans, most of us probably, have this personality trait of greed to one degree or another, and because of that, I think that is why we as a country, maybe we as a world, are in this chaos. I want you to think like me. I want you to dress like me. I want more property than you. I want more money than you. I want to be prettier than you. I want to be able to afford more clothes than you. This idea of greed, and I think somewhere all of us are guilty. I want more knowledge. I want more answers. When I started looking at what was going on with politics and looking at how we got into this mess, it came down to greed and not trusting each other and not telling the truth, and right back to this idea when we were in England as a people and we wanted to get away from the tyranny, we came to America to be free. And maybe that's what I'm looking for in doing all of these classes. I want to set people free from 30 pills that cost $30,000. It doesn't have to be that way. Richard, are you ready yet?
I am.
Okay. Awesome.
In 2010, I know. No, that's a whole, we could do a whole show just about everything you said. But I'll introduce Susan. In 2010, Susan Hale created an event on Facebook called Earth Day, Sing for the Trees. The idea is simple. On Earth Day, April 22nd, sing for the trees you love. At noon, where you are in the world. Since 2010, over 10,000 people in 41 countries have joined the song. This is how Susan met her husband, Ian. He sang that first year for White-Leaved Oak, the Great Oak of Eardsley, and the Much Markle Yew. When they met in 2011, he took her to see the White-Leaved Oak at the southern end of the Malvern Hills. She likes to think that the trees brought her to England. Music therapy and sound healing have been her main career. She's helped thousands of people find and free their natural voices through her workshops. She's traveled the world and sung in many sacred places, including the Chartres Cathedral, the prehistoric cave of Lascaux, and Roslyn Chapel. Three of her books have been published, Song and Silence, Voicing the Soul, 1995, Sacred Space, Sacred Sound, The Acoustic Mysteries of a Holy Place, 2007, and now her first fictional novel, Emma Oliver and the Song of Creation. Good morning, Susan.
Good morning, Richard. Wow. It's great to be here. Yeah.
Always amazing when you hear your own life read as a bio.
Yeah, like, it is.
Wow, really?
I did all that? Yeah.
I have to ask right out of the gate, have you always been kind of, I can't come up with a better word than this right now, possessed by caring for nature?
Yes, I was, although I didn't know that I was. I always loved oak trees in California where I lived, and my father was the chairman of a tree committee in Hanford, California, and my favorite tree was my grandmother's fig tree that my brother and I used to climb. So I wouldn't say that I was possessed in the way that I am now for caring for nature, but it certainly was a huge part of my childhood. I think everybody's got a special tree that spoke to them as a child.
Well, I did have,
I really believe that trees...
Go ahead, Sherry.
I really believe that trees speak to you, and they've told me stories in our backyard, and I told my kids those stories, and they didn't believe me, of course. And then one day my son and his friend were in the backyard, and they came running in the house. They were pasty white. It's, the mulberry tree talked to us. The mulberry tree talked to us. And so it was awesome. If you listen, it's really there.
Yes. Yes, if you listen. And that's the point, because we're so entranced by this whole technological world that we've stopped listening. We've stopped seeing the things that are happening around us because we're glued into a screen or we're glued into our phones. So it's a breath of fresh air to go out and be with the trees, and literally that's what they give us, fresh air.
Well, I thought of you actually last year or earlier this year. I have no sense of time. I went to a conference called Call of the Forest, Water, Climate, and Spirit, with Diana Beresford Kroger, who wrote a book, The Global Forest, 40 Ways Trees Can Save Us.
Oh, wonderful.
And she was an amazing spokesperson for the trees, partially because she was a cardiovascular surgeon, particularly heart surgery was her specialty and quite renowned. And she got fed up with aspects of that, what I will use the term industry. And she went back to school and got a degree in botany. And so she took all she had about the knowledge of the human system and turned that into botany, and a lot of what she was talking about was this aspect of exactly what you said, breath of fresh air. In Japan, they have forests, and those forests are dedicated to go be in them and actually inhale the air from those trees, because there are actually esters that are released by the trees that we take into our bodies that actually improve our immune system and well-being. And it made me think of you because it was a mind-blowing, especially coming from a person of her background and kind of, in a very positive way, surly attitude about it. Like, what aren't you getting? She explained the chemistry and the hormone cascades of what happens when you go in the forest and inhale these, oils that are being released from the trees. And it was an amazing thing. It was truly, of course you want to honor the forests. What are you thinking?
An interesting fact that I just found out last week going online looking at things about trees. A human needs 740 kilograms of oxygen per year. That's 7 and 8 trees worth. That's
wow.
Not very much. That's 7 and 8 trees worth.
Wow.
So, wow, yes. It's like you said earlier, what aren't we getting? And part of my passion for Earth Day Sing for the Trees is if you make a relationship with nature, whether it's water, a stone, the ocean, a tree, you start caring about it. You start noticing it. You notice if it's dying. You notice if it's polluted. You go back and you see what's happening in that part of the forest or that part of the river. And so that's been one of the things the past several years is sing for the trees you love. Create that relationship.
How did you go from...
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, Richard.
I just wanted to ask
how she went from sacred places to sacred trees.
Well, because they're sacred. And when I was promoting my book in 2007, The Acoustic Mysteries of Holy Places, I was traveling for a full year. And just before I left New Mexico, juniper trees were dying. I arrive in Atlanta, Georgia, and North Carolina, and the hemlock trees are dying. You know, I was traveling in a lot of places around England and France and around the States, and without knowing my passion for trees, people were just telling me what was happening on their block, and they were telling me about their trees that were dying. And so as I was traveling, this story slowly began to weave its way into me about the dying trees. And Emma Oliver in the Song of Creation, she's asked to sing to the dying great mother tree in the Shining Land. And Emma comes from a long line of tree singers, but she doesn't know that, and she doesn't think she has a voice. And so the book is a discovery of her finding out who she is and generational healing and finding her voice and singing this song to the dying great mother tree. So it came out of that sense of urgency, which I heard Richard talking about at the beginning about water, that sense of urgency of trees are dying, water is polluted. You know, what are we doing about it? What can we do about it? And I thought, well, most of my career, early on I was doing some work with children in psychiatric hospitals. But, you know, more recently I've been working mostly with women, helping them find and free their voices. And I thought, I want to reach children because they are the generation now that is going to be the next tree protectors, the water protectors, the people who are with these wonderful, primal, essential ingredients of life. And being a voice for them. So that's where my journey took me.
It's a wonderful journey. I want to ask, at least for everybody else in the other states, this is a personal question, but it may go to a pattern. I'm not sure. It just so happens last night I saw a news report, and I was aware of this. This has been going on and off for a number of years, where the oak trees in California have been dying.
Yes.
And at first we thought it was related to drought, because California's been in such drought for, you know, years now, seven-ish years or more. I've been saying 7 years for at least five, so it's probably more like teens of years now. And now the report that they're looking at, now this is coming from the Forestry Service, so they may be observing it from the position of there's a particular beetle that appears when there are long-term drought conditions, and then rain comes and the beetle gets active. And we're looking at an area from, let's say, San Francisco to L.A., which is about 400 miles, 350 miles, in the forest, that are national forests, so it's large forests, where tens of thousands, because I think it's more than that, tens of thousands of acres are being threatened and trees are dying like crazy. Is there is there a turnaround, or is there, you've spent much time being with trees. Are they as sad about that as I am? And
well,
is there something we can do to help them?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, I'm still finding the answer. I think we're all still finding the answer to this. But one of the things in my book, it's in the early chapters in Emma Oliver and the Song of Creation, there are a lot about Emma's angst. She's new in this town of Peachtree City, Georgia. She has to take care of her grandmother who can't talk, who just moved to them. And but simultaneously, these tree spirits, these tree devas, appear in Peachtree City to hold an emergency council. And they start speaking, and they start telling the story from their perspective of what's going on. And if I may, I'll just read a tiny bit of that. I've got to find it because I didn't know that I was going to be reading it. Well, here's just one thing I opened up. Floribunda, who's a peach tree deva, says, "The time has arrived to come out into the open. Things have gotten much worse since we last met. The great mother tree is dying. Many of our friends and family are dying." She wiped tears from her eyes. "We are gathered here at this 11th hour to hold council. We must reach out to help the people here. It is dangerous not knowing who we can trust, but we must try." So then after a round of applause and some more things, "Ladies, ladies, come to order," Floribunda called loudly. "Now for our reports. Lady Loblolly, would you please go first?" A tall platinum blonde stood up from her chair and spoke with a southern drawl. "Jody, Sugar Maple Tree is dying. You know, the one that her grandmother planted in front of her house?" Gasps of horror flooded the room. Next, a willowy woman stood up. "That's not all. In Atlanta, perfectly good houses are being torn down to make way for huge new mansions. And right here in Peachtree City, the ponds where the spring peepers come are being drained. Luxury apartments will be built in their place. Birdie, what have the birds told you?" "Cottonwood trees are dying in New Mexico," Birdie said. "Hemlock trees all over the south are sick. Bark beetles are chewing junipers. Bristlecone pines aren't regenerating. But I have good news. I found the girl. I gave her one of my swan feathers." So Birdie, this bird deva, gives Emma Oliver this swan feather that emits this melody, this haunting melody, which is the song of creation that Emma must sing. So I believe that, yes, the tree spirits are there, they're real, and that they are concerned about what's going on. Whenever we reach out to nature, nature reaches back to us. Whenever we listen to nature, whether it's a tree or a seashell or the sound of a river or an animal, nature reaches back to us and starts speaking to us.
And it just made me flash back to, as a part of my tenderness for the trees, is that I spent much of my younger years, junior high and high school and some college, hiking much of this region. Group of us would go out and hike for and camp in virgin forest. I mean, they had paths and trails, but I mean, they were, you know, just forestry campgrounds. These weren't cabins. This wasn't luxury. You were hiking, and we'd go out and spend a couple of weeks or up to a month hiking in these forests. And I remember being mesmerized even before I was whatever I am now, that, you know, laying at night in the sleeping bag and looking up at the stars through these trees and hearing the wind through the trees and hearing nature.
Yeah.
It was just always, it was like the most soothing thing for me to be in nature. It was very calming, very like, how could you not, you know, I didn't have any sense of the parts that you're talking about now, the sacred part. that wasn't in my consciousness yet, but it was an experiential thing of being in nature and having that, you know, hearing the sound of the stream bubbling across the rocks, hearing the wind. I mean, it was truly amazing.
It's our human nature. It's our human nature. We're not separate from this world. We're part of it. There's David Abram, who's a wonderful philosopher, ecologist. I heard him talk several times, and he was talking about changing the word earth to air, putting an I in there, that we're standing here on the planet and part of it. It's not separate from us. And this magical realm is not separate from us either. It is part of our human heritage.
Yes. And I have a question from chat about tree spirits versus either space or geographic location spirits. And is there a difference to those, you know, versus an acoustic event where you've gone into a cave or, you know, a structure that has been built for an acoustic purpose, whether they knew it or not, or a place or a geographic? Are spirits spirits, or do they all have slightly different textures in your experience?
They all have slightly different textures. I mean, a rock spirit feels different to me than a tree spirit, but they feel part of a bigger family. They're related, just like we're all related. We come from different places, we're from different races, but we're all related, we're all part of that human family. So I would say we're all part of that spirit family. And singing inside of a tree, yes, acoustically sounds very different than being in a cave or a cathedral, because the resonance is very, very different. But it's still a remarkable experience. There's a wonderful tree that you mentioned, the Much Markle Yew tree, not very far from where I live in Great Malvern. It's in a little village called Much Markle, and it's this 1,500-year-old massive yew tree that has a seat in it. You can seat probably about 8 people in it. And I've gone there a lot alone before I met my husband, and with my husband and with other friends. And we turn and face the inner bark of the tree and sing. And it's an amazing experience. And I've gotten a lot of messages there, including the end of my book. The Much Markle Yew Tree gave me the end of my book. So that was good.
Wow. Oh, wonderful. And it's neat. I have a follow-up question in chat about this. So nature, even though sometimes nature, like I think of being in locations where it was a waterfall and, you know, other sounds happening, so it could seem somewhat chaotic, but nature seems to be always harmonic. As you said, it seems to, you know, it has a relationship to all the parts relate to each other in some way, so there's a certain harmony.
Yeah.
Are people places, I'll pick on Manhattan just because it comes to mind. I'm not really picking on it. It's a cacophony. Like, I'm not particularly a large city person, so that's how it feels to me.
Right.
When I'm in a large city, it always feels like, wow! So are people places often chaotic and disharmonic in your experience?
Well, I think there's certainly places within those people places that aren't. But, yeah, the experience of walking downtown in New York City with those skyscrapers and this sound that gets amplified, and what's getting amplified are the cars and the concrete and the rush and the things that aren't natural. So I believe, at least it puts me, and I'll admit to being an extra sensitive person, it puts me in an unnatural state. I don't feel grounded. And when I'm in a city like New York, I go to Central Park, or I try to find, you know, some park or some tree or just go outside of the city and, you know, literally breathe again and reconnect.
Yes, yeah. I'm laughing. I was just at a conference where I'd be in an auditorium with 3,000 people, and it was lectures, so it wasn't a cacophony, but there'd be that moment where everybody would suddenly stand up and start talking and everything. And
yeah.
At least twice a day, I had to go. The conference is on a grounds where they actually have a large pond, and this time of year, the geese are landing. And so friends would know that they would find me out next to the pond, sort of gazing and listening to the geese. I'd go over in the trees and, like, hide like a creature. And
yeah.
I'm shy, but not that kind of shy. But for that exact same, I just had to be where I could listen to the geese. It was just like,
yeah.
Oh, the geese, thank heaven, the geese. Because it was just amazing. It was just overwhelming.
And we're outside of that little mental world, that boxed-in world, where the ego is amplified in that boxed-in world. And our mental thoughts are boxed in. And we go outside, and then, oh, right, we're part of life. We're not just part of people, and we're not just part of this building or these ideas, as wonderful as they are. I love going to conferences, but like you, I get a bit overwhelmed at times. And, yeah, just need to tune in to something more primal,
yeah,
more real.
Nothing like a tree for real.
Nothing like a tree for real, yeah.
I have a sort of an odd question. This has to do with acoustics. There's a structure in the center of Salt Lake, and it's the Tabernacle in the Temple Square in Salt Lake City in Utah.
Yeah.
And I remember as a child, I had relatives there. And we went there a couple of times, and I remember the very first time we went into this tabernacle, and it's an auditorium that holds about somewhere around 5,000 to 7,000 people. So it's a large space. And one of the things they like to do is demonstrate the acoustics of this building so you're in the back of the hall, and they would drop a pin on the table. And you could hear that pin.
Mm.
Or tear a newspaper up front where you couldn't, you know, you would hear it. The acoustics of the structure was so perfect, or I'm not sure perfect is the right word, whatever it was, in terms of its ability to reflect sound. It was an amazing thing to hear.
Yeah.
And that still sticks in my brain. I can still have that experience in my mind of thinking, wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And the effect of that. And I'm wondering... This is a very side question. Do you think that they had any agenda in that, or was it just, have you ever had that experience? Have you ever been to that space? Are you aware of that space?
I've never been to that space, but I believe that acoustics in the ancient places were intentionally built for acoustic reasons.
Right. This structure has been updated a couple of times, but it was originally built in the mid to late 1800s, and it took a long time, and the gentleman who designed it, the architect, was a thought leader, and everybody said it couldn't possibly be done because there are no interior beams supporting this huge roof. It's how I have some, I don't know, cantilevered magic, something or other, so I don't remember, but I mean it was an amazing thing to experience, and I've always wondered if, you know, maybe the LDS knew something about acoustics. Hard for me to give them that much credit. Maybe
maybe they could. Yeah, I wanted to also just mention briefly that, because before I came on the show, you were talking about things like what can we do, and there's a wonderful organization I belong to that started here in England called Tree Sisters, and I'm a regular member of Tree Sister. I send £10 a month and help. They're up to 1 million trees. I think it's a month. I think they're up to 1 million trees a month.
Wow.
That they're funding. Women are the primary funders of this. That's the idea, that women have something to give and that the feminine needs to rise and share and protect our trees. So they're doing wonderful work. And yes, there's a lot of trees that are dying. There's tragedies all over the planet with trees that are dying. And at the same time, there are wonderful organizations that are planting trees or are protecting ancient trees or educating about trees, including Prince Charles. He's the Prince's Rainforest Alliance. He's been part of. So good stuff going on as well.
That's really fabulous. Thank you. Thank you for the counterbalance.
Yeah.
That's really great. I have a question. I have two questions about, I have a number of questions, lots of ideas about this, about Emma Oliver, your newest book, The Emma Oliver and the Song of Creation. The first question coming in from the audience is your book's character Emma from Harry Potter's I don't know what that word is, Hermione? I don't know that name.
Oh, Hermione.
Character. Thank you,
Hermione. It's very different than Hermione. I mean, I love Hermione. I love the Harry Potter books. And Hermione is just this really bright spark. She's a genius. She is very courageous. Emma's really fragile at the beginning of the book. She's very lonely. She's bullied. She hates this new world that she finds herself in, and she talks to the tree in her backyard, this oak tree she calls Annie Oakley. And little does she know, but Annie Oakley, you know, pretty soon into the book starts talking to her. And she meets these other tree sisters. But she has to face different... It's very similar structure to the hero's journey. She has to go, or the shaman's journey. She has to go to the underworld. She goes through the in-between. She has to face her fears. She has to find out who she is. She has to escape from Esmeralda, the evil ivy tree deva, who stole her grandmother's voice and is trying to steal hers now. And so she has to confront this. She has to confront her own fears and hate. She has to recognize the courage that she has inside of herself. And then she has to go into the shining land and sing this song to the dying great mother tree, not knowing exactly how to do that. She has the melody, but there's more to it than that. So she really has to confront her inner world. Harry Potter, they're confronting, you know, of course, this nemesis from the outer world, Voldemort, and Hermione's part of that team. But Emma's alone. She does have a lot of helpers, but she has to do this alone. She has to go on this journey alone.
Mm-hmm. And as I read the book, how much of, and now that we've talked, and we've talked to you before, how much of this is what I will call semi-autobiographical?
It is. And I read something recently that said everybody's first novel is an autobiography. I grew up, I was a very sensitive girl. I grew up in a loving family, a supportive family, but I grew up in the 1950s. You know, it wasn't a big time of consciousness. I had lots of feelings and thoughts that I didn't get validated from the outside world. I thought it was a little bit strange. And I did have some bullying that happened. And I also, when we moved to California, Central California, from Arizona, this is the part that was, you know, very much part of what Emma was dealing with her grandmother, Maisie, was I had to go over every week and visit my grandfather who had Parkinson's disease. I was 8 years old, and my aunt had multiple sclerosis, So I went over every week to visit these invalids. And nobody ever talked to me about that. Nobody ever said, Susie, how do you feel about that? Does that scare you? You know, let me talk to you about Grandpa Ed. Let me tell you what he was like. I never knew my aunt and my grandfather as healthy people. You know, I would go and I would smell pee. I would, spit dribbling. You know, I was witnessing all these things. And Emma's afraid she's going to end up like her grandmother. And that was my childhood fear, that I would end up like my aunt or my grandparents. And again, nobody reassured me. Nobody took me by the hand and said, you know, how do you feel about this? Or even, do you want to go? You know, you don't have to go this Sunday. Would you rather stay home? Would you rather, you know, be with your friends? So for years, I went through this world that was really foreign to a little girl. And my grandmother, bless her heart, was their caretaker. So we would go over to support my grandmother. We moved to California to be closer to my grandmother so that my mother and father could help her. And part of the reason I wrote the book is to reach out to young people and to say you might be witnessing things that are hard for you to witness, and you're not alone. And maybe you have a part to play in this healing that you could play if you were given a different way to play it. Does that make sense to you?
Mm-hmm.
It's emotional.
Also, I think from listening to the book, reading the book, that, you know, as you said, it is such a, in a sense, the classic heroine's journey, and the confusion, you know, early on, as you say, the confusion as she steps into the world of into the tree realm, into the fairy realm, into the deva realm. And then, you know, the adventure continues from there. But, I mean, to have that as a support, even though it's confusing as you step into that other, kind of other dimensional, but not actually other dimensional, but kind of. I don't quite know what to call that.
Yes.
It's an amazing, you know, journey to, but at least, but you do have those allies available. That's the powerful thing to me. Of the story is, look, there are these allies. There, nature is speaking to you, really, you know, if you pay attention. That's a wonderful gift.
Yes, and she does have her wonderful Uncle Alf, Maisie's brother, an elder who comes from England to see his sister. And Alf is able to see. He's the wise old man. He's able to get the overview of what's happened. He's able to validate Emma. And he's able to help her in that world that she's going into. And we need those helpers. We need those elders and wise ones. I'm 66 now. So I'm taking on that role of an elder.
And isn't that shocking?
Yeah.
Isn't that like, wait a minute, I am the elder. Oh, no, how'd I get here? Yes,
I'm just about
to be 65, so I'm in that same, like, at this environmental conference I was at, you know, I am now one of the elders, and I'm like, wait a minute, when did I become an elder? When did I become Sir?
Yeah.
Oh, good
and
grief. And I'm not offended by it. I'm not offended by it, and I'm certain the trees are the same way, like, yes, I've been here for 1,500 years, what's your question?
Yes.
They have that same sense of mirth, like, yes, I'm really old. What? You know.
Yeah, I know. They're wonderful. They're so wonderful. I love them so much.
And I have a question about, you mentioned the book, you talk about a number of things, and one of them was about, in this book, I just wrote this line down about spending too much time with the trees. And I can't remember who the character was that was confronting her.
Her mother said that. Oh, you and the trees. You're always spending time with the trees.
It could be
like,
so much worse. Really? That's what you're worried about? That's it? In today's day and age? Oh, too much time with the trees. That made me chuckle. And
yeah.
And I do like the way you weave through in how I would present, like, my ranting about water. You're not ranting, but, you know, like how you contextualize that, you know, we need butterflies for pollination. You talk about
yeah.
the butterflies and how we need them
yeah.
for pollination. I mean, that's so, yeah, butterflies.
Butterflies, the monarch butterflies. It's close to the Day of the Dead. How many are returning now to Mexico? I don't know, but, you know,
yeah.
years ago they were dwindling. So one of the things that I loved early on working on my book was I did meet with a couple of mothers and daughters and get their feedback on some early drafts. And one little girl who was about 10 years old suggested that the tree Davis say at the protest when other people are protesting, you know, for the construction, that the tree Davis says, "You want to breathe, don't you?" And I just love that, you know, out of a child's mouth, she got it.
Yeah.
It wasn't complex.
This isn't that difficult. That's the way I feel about the water and as you said,
yes,
the butterflies and everything. It's like, this is not that tricky. You like breathing? Figure it out.
You want to breathe? Figure it out. You want to eat food? You know, let's have bees and butterflies. You want to live? Some water and protect the water. And I do stand with the water protectors. I think what they're doing is really courageous and very valuable. And so, and I stand with whoever's protecting for the trees, and I stand for nature, and I stand for children that are the next generation coming up so they can have
absolutely.
A beautiful world. And they can go out and have those experiences you talked about when you were hiking and it's night and you look up and there's this canopy of the trees that you're seeing the stars through. And it's magic, but it's life. It's nature. It's our human nature.
Well, and as a even as a child, I had some sort of aha. It wasn't until years later that I really realized that time in the first time I drank spring water out of the earth was in the middle of a forest. And I still remember the sweetness of that water just bubbling out of the earth. And it wasn't coming down a creek. It was just literally coming out of the earth.
Well,
I remember drinking that water still.
It's wonderful living in Malvern because there are over 100 springs and wells. Not all of them are functioning, but my husband and I, Ian, we go and collect our water every 3 weeks from a holy well. And we sing to it. We sing the waters.
Mm.
And we're drinking that water. And it's such a privilege to be here and to be with these ancient oak trees and yew trees that are massive and so much bigger and so much older than, well, no, they're not older than, you know, the redwoods or whatever. But, you know, there's very unique trees here in the UK that are wonderful to be with.
How wonderful. I am stunned to find we're almost coming up to an end, which is shocking. Do people work with you? Do you hold classes in the States, in the United States? I mean, do you do anything online? How do people learn about your work? And tell us a little bit more about how we join on Singing to the Trees, because I see that as an ongoing project.
Yes. Well, I've got two websites. One is my new one, Emma Oliver and the Song of Creation.com, and that primarily is about this book. And, you know, work with children that I'm just beginning to do. I did my book launch yesterday, and some lovely children came, and it was so wonderful to hold a swan feather out to them and to have them hold it and sing with me, as well as their parents and grandparents. And so I'm wanting to do more work with children and find more ways to go into school. So I'm going to be going into some schools here. And then my other site is songkeeper.net, which at the moment is mostly about Earth Day Sing for the Trees, but I'm going to be adding more to that. And I'm sort of, I'm not retired. Am I semi-retired? What am I? I'm actually reinventing myself as we speak and wanting to work more with children, as well as to continue to help people find their voices. I do work with people on Skype if they'd like to do private sessions with me. And I haven't been back to the States in a while, but would love an invitation for a conference or whatever. And if Steven Spielberg's listening, I'd love to see Emma as a book, as a movie.
Ooh, that would be wonderful. That would be a great, because
yeah.
as I read it, it was very much a visual book to me. You know,
everybody,
it's very, I can see it totally being visualized as a story, as that sort of that interesting mix between animatronics and, you know, what they're doing now with the amazing dimensionalized, you know, films. It would be a wonderful film. So I look forward to that. Stephen, get on that. Make it so.
Get on that, Stephen. You just did the BFG, so let's follow it with Emma Oliver and the Song of Creation.
That would be wonderful. It's such a great environmental story.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, so people can work with you. Have you ever done any online voice, stepping into your voice work?
I've done it privately. I was doing some teleseminars. When I moved to England, I suddenly had to go through many stages of immigration and learn to drive. I have my driver's license now. So I had to put some of my other work aside, and I was also writing my book. But I'm open to doing those sorts of things. And yes, we'll see what the trees want me to do next. And what people
probably come
want me
sit
to
with
do.
Them. The trees probably want you to come hang out. Just come hang out. It'll work out. Don't worry. In the big picture, it'll all be okay.
And more things in nature, more things taking people into nature. I have done some of that, and I've loved that work. Yeah.
That's wonderful.
Yes.
Okay, well, that went incredibly fast. I will put all of these links in the show notes over at Blog Talk Radio for people who want to find out more information. And as I said, you can hear this show or share it with your friends by going to soundhealthoptions.com, click on the radio tab, and then Blog Talk Radio. And probably in about 20 minutes or 30 minutes, this show will be there, and you can listen to it again or share it with your friends. Any closing thoughts, Sherry?
Sound reveals many secrets, and I'm very much in gratitude to Susan for revealing that from our imagination, from sacred spaces, from inside ourselves. Thank you, Susan, for being here.
Oh, thank you, Sherry, and thank you, Richard. It's really been a joy.
That was wonderful. Thank you. Everybody have a great rest of the week, and we'll see you on Tuesday. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.